Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the February 2019 webinar for DSCS. I am DS.
Yes, I'm CS and the remainder.
Yes, people have been asking what does DSCS stand for? And to us it's obvious, but I understand why people have been asking. So
there'd be something wrong with us if it wasn't obvious.
Right. For us it is. Okay, so this webinar is about finding studies. You know, I've looked back through all the webinars. We've been doing webinars for like these official kind of webinars with AnyMeeting, not Google Hangouts. We used to do Google Hangouts years ago. These are the real webinars. We've been doing these for about a year and a half. And I've looked through all of them.
Yeah, year and a half?
Yeah, year and a half. Might even be longer.
I was thinking longer.
Mm,
oh, no, the webinars. Yeah, webinars.
The official webinars like this one, not the Google Hangouts.
Right.
Because we've done this topic on the Google Hangouts.
Right.
But it was no slides. It was just you and I being informal. We're still informal, but at least we have slides. We've grown up a little.
A little.
So I've looked through all of the official webinars, and I've never seen one on finding studies. And that's primarily what we do for our clients and for ourselves and for anyone that is interested in starting a clinic. So this is for the research sites or people that are thinking about starting research sites. It's good for CRAs too, because a lot of CRAs are thinking about opening sites. Or it's good for anyone who's curious about the process. You know, sometimes when you're stuck doing a job and you're doing the same thing over and over for years, it's hard to forget that you are in a holistic industry where there's a lot of stuff going on besides the things you do daily, even for us. And we're pretty diverse in that we have our hands in a lot of different opportunities, but even we don't do everything that this industry needs.
Absolutely. And if I were an audience member and I were listening to everything you had just said, I would have one question. Not that I would really care if it were answered or not, but I would have one question. Why are CRAs looking to get into research?
Ah, well, I really didn't know that you were going to bring this topic up. And I mean, as you can probably tell, we do not rehearse these at all.
No, not at all.
There's actually a good chance we're muted right now and no one can hear.
Yeah, that happened last time.
But I'm glad you brought it up because I got an Instagram direct message, and this is a shameless plug. Go follow me on Instagram. And Dan's Farah, I'm on there. So anyways, someone who's a CRA read an article about CRA burnout.
Mm-hmm. And I think that truly exists.
Yeah, and I told her we're going to, and maybe you and I can do a podcast on this later, like a long podcast for the audio. So go to, if you're not subscribed, another shameless plug, go to Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. We have a podcast, or Stitcher or Google Play, and we will upload that episode tonight. She sent me an article. They did a survey.
She's struggling with some depression, some anxiety, I think. And she's only been a CRA for a year.
Wow.
And so this is the time where they're really working you. And they should care, but they don't care about your mental health.
Sure.
Like, she's even requested time off, and they're kind of like making fun of her. Right. And this is a big CRO.
Wow.
So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Chris and I actually work in research. We do mental health research. Like, we're familiar with this stuff.
One of our key therapeutic areas.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up as to why CRAs are thinking of starting sites. I mean, that's your answer. It's burnout. CRA burnout.
Yeah, I would completely agree.
And so thank you for reminding me.
What would you say is the average length in time? It's usually not a year. I would say it's closer to six.
Most CRAs to get burned out.
Yeah. What would you say?
I don't know. I just know that it happens.
Yeah, from what evidence you're aware of. Like 6-7 years.
Yeah, and we might even have some CRAs listening, so type in the chat. And by the way, if you have questions, just hit us up in the chat. But yeah, I don't know what the years are, but I think it's most stressful in that first 2 years.
Oh, yeah. But usually when it's new to you, you can handle the stress more.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think 5-6 years is good for burnout.
Right.
If you're like at a factory, which are most of these CROs now are basically factories.
Yep.
If you work at the sponsor, it's a little better. From most of the sponsors I've dealt with and interacted with their employees, there's more emphasis on work-life balance.
I think so too.
Not with CROs, though. They get paid for you to be on site.
Yep, I completely agree.
So anyways, finding studies, should be important for everybody, who's interested, right? And at some point you might be interested. Somebody sent a message. I will check while we move on to the next slide. So Chris, introduce us to this slide.
Register your PI with what? Like, what are we going to register them with? Well, drug dev. It's a good one, right?
Drugdev.org. They got acquired by IQVIA. Did you know that?
And what is Drugdev? It's a...
It's a portal.
But it's a... I can't think of the word. It's a conglomerate of many sponsors, right? I don't think it has CROs. I think it's just sponsors, right? It's like Pfizer, Johnson & Janssen.
It's the...
Conglomerate of these sponsors, right?
Yeah, it was put into place. I know the founder, actually. I've interviewed her a few times, and they've now sold it to IQVIA for an undisclosed amount, which means a lot.
Right.
Her name is Melissa Easy. I've met her at a few conferences. Like, I've known her since she started this in her home, Drugdev.
Okay.
And now it's acquired by IQVIA, and I think she works for them now for a while. When you sell, they keep you on as an employee for like 2 or 3 years.
Right.
There was a consortium of pharmas that shared data. This was around 2012.
Sure sites and
like transparency movement.
Right.
Right. And so Drugdev is one of them, but you can also go to every major CRO website and register your investigators.
Yes, absolutely. But you won't accomplish that through Drugdev alone.
Now, someone said off topic, Chris sounds just like Seth Rogen. Maybe. Maybe.
I do?
I can hear that.
I don't think so. And I'm a stoner either, so.
Oh, no. But we are getting into CBD.
Yes.
Which is the opposite of being a stoner.
But you can smoke the whole field and you won't get high.
That's right. That's a side topic. One day we'll do a webinar on CBD.
Right.
On maybe on ancillary businesses and research, once you understand the process better. All right, so every major CRO has a portal where you can register your investigator. If you have multiple investigators, you need to register each of them. Yep. If you want to study for them, you need to register them. This is the passive way of getting studies, right? Yep. It works.
Yeah,
I mean, it's free. You should do it, right?
Yeah, everybody should do it.
But that should be where it begins, not where it ends. A lot of people do that and then just sit back and think their email is going to explode with opportunities, and it doesn't happen.
For certain, it doesn't happen.
And you might get lucky with one.
Yeah, I would expect to get one maybe two studies where we're currently at passively each year.
Right? Yeah.
But we've been established in the industry. So
and that's new, for each of our sites.
Right. If you're new, no, don't, I would not count on any studies passively.
Right. Now, our consulting, we get more passive leads. We get one or two, maybe a week. That's a little
different. They're coming, when I say passively, I say when they come directly to one of our PIs, right?
Yeah, one of the sites we own.
Right. When it's what you're describing, that's where they come to us and say, hey, we are aware of what you do and your network of physicians. Would any be interested in this study?
Right.
Completely different ballgame.
Right. Now, do you agree with this? Sponsors and the FDA don't really care about your site. They care about the PI.
Yes, I do agree with that.
I kind of agree with that, too. I mean,
they care about the site a little bit.
Yes. And we have a client, a good friend of ours, who is having issues with her PI.
Right.
And she's considering rebranding her site.
Right.
And you suggested it wouldn't hurt, but it's really not necessary.
Right. But I'm uncertain to how much it will hurt. So I think it's better safe than sorry.
Right. And it doesn't cost much to rebrand. I mean, correct. It's another $800 for a new website, logo, email. Yep. Like, it's not much considering the possibilities. But for the most part, sponsors and FDAs don't really care about your site. They care about your PI name.
Yep.
Okay. Now, familiarize yourself with clinicaltrials.gov. So at our sites, our biz dev, I used to do this for all of our sites. And then when we started doing consulting for other sites, we started hiring people to do this. And now I don't do this at all because they do it for our sites as well.
Correct.
But clinicaltrials.gov is the best, I mean, absolute best kept secret in research.
Not really a secret,
though. It is a secret because no one's using it.
Well, I mean, it's not a secret, just nobody uses it.
Right.
If you're in the industry, you better be aware of clinicaltrials.gov, no?
Yeah, but people don't understand that it's like they're sitting on potential money, and it's free.
Yeah.
So on a daily basis or as often as you can, you need to go on clinicaltrials.gov and start looking for studies in indications that you're interested in. So if you do asthma studies, you look for that. You look for other related conditions too, like COPD, other respiratory stuff. You go on there, and yes, a lot of the contacts are going to be hidden or just generic inboxes. There's not much you can do other than doing some background research on that particular company yourself, right? Using something like ZymeWire, which is on another slide. There's a couple other portals you can use where you can get people's names. I think it's Zoom Info. There's ways to do it, but it's doesn't make it easy. It's just you still have to do the work.
And you can even call the company and try and track down who you should contact about this particular trial.
Now, occasionally, I would say 20% of the time, you will find a study where right on clinicaltrials.gov, there's the contact info. Sometimes their cell phone number. You can text these people.
Yeah.
Texting is great. People do not ignore texts for the most part.
Yeah, because they know they can answer or not answer.
Right. It's convenient. So what do you do when you found – did you ever do biz dev, actually, Chris?
Very little.
Okay. Someone said, we have numerous PIs. Is there a way to register once on a sponsor or CRO site rather than having to enter the same site info over and over? I'm sure on some CROs there is, but on most of them it's PI. It's not by site.
Yeah, it's by PI.
It's by investigator. So it's a repetitive process. Drug Dev was trying to make that easier, and since they've been acquired by IQVIA, I'm sure they're favoring IQVIA studies, but the work is still going to be there. And this is good for somebody like a research assistant to do for you. So when you find that contact from clinicaltrials.gov, email, call, text, repeat this process until you get studies, and then don't stop doing it. Continue doing it on a regular basis. Consistency is key. Yep. You want a full pipeline. No matter what you do in any business, you want to have a full pipeline.
Even when that pipeline's full, you should still be looking.
Yes.
You never know when you might find that perfect study. I can let one of my other studies go. I want to do this one. You never know when that might happen.
Yep. So this is a process constantly have to do as a site owner, even after you have already acquired studies. We're doing it. Now, I'm not actually doing it. We have, but I've hired people to do it.
Right.
It doesn't mean you yourself have to do it, but early on, you are going to be the one that's going to have to do this yourself. So if you're bootstrapping, if you're not, maybe you have the added luxury of not being in that position. You can have someone do it. But I still think, especially when you're developing your own internal processes for biz dev, I think you, the site owner, needs to know the process so that you can at least train other people on how to do it. Like when we hired people to do biz dev for us, because I've been doing it for years, I knew how to train them on it. And I wrote a manual so that anyone else in the future who joins us, you know, their learning curve is going to be shortened based on the experience we've developed as an organization. What are your thoughts on shared investigator portal being developed by pharma? I mean, I think it's the same thing as what we're talking about. Like, they're being developed. They're not uniformly used across the industry. So it's never going to get easier to get studies. And that's actually a good thing, because if it was easy to get studies, then there would be no opportunities for the new entrants in the marketplace. Like, even the established sites have to work to get new studies. And that work is the variable. If it was easy and studies just came passively, they would just keep going passively to the experienced sites. So this hard work, this stuff that nobody else wants to do, should be your advantage. This should be your strength. You should be willing to outwork the competition. And that's what clinicaltrials.gov can do for you for free. All right, never stop applying to studies. Spend 1 hour a day when you're starting out, 1 hour a day emailing, calling, writing letters. Even if you're not doing it, you can have other people do this. They should be at least spending 1 hour a day going on clinicaltrials.gov, emailing, calling. Like I said, you can send text messages. You can read news articles and see which biotechs get funding. Develop some phone scripts so that this is why I recommend you do this first as the site owner. Do this yourself. Write down everything you're doing. Write down the process so that when you figure it out and you want to start having other people do it, you have a formula for them to follow. Write out phone scripts. Write out email scripts. Write objections that the other person's going to bring up or questions the other side. What if they reply to your email? You know, sometimes they'll reply to your email, the sponsors or the CROs, and they're going to ask you specifics. Whoever's answering these emails need to know what to be able to say. Should have scripts for this.
Without a doubt.
All right. Responses you'll receive. 80% of the time, they will ignore you. That's okay. 10% of the time, they will respond with, "We are not looking for sites at the moment, but we'll keep your info on a file." Another 10% of the time, they will ask you follow-up questions, like I just said, or send you a CDA. In a year like 2019, they're not asking many follow-up questions.
Yeah, you just get that CDA.
There's not enough sites to do all the studies that are out there
right
now. There's just not. Right? So follow-up. I like to use CRMs for this, but Excel would work too.
Quite a few.
We went out, but we are back. Okay, so when they ignore me, I follow up once a month. When they reply with, "We're still looking for sites, but we'll keep your info on file," I don't want to punish them for replying to me in the first place. So I'll do once a quarter. And then 10% that ask follow-up questions, I mean, that's immediate. This should be immediately responding to them. Which study's the target? Go ahead, Chris. This is all you.
Okay, I was pausing to see if the microphone stopped. I was curious. Okay, so which study's the target? Target studies that will boost your PICV.
Phase 4.
Which study's the target? Well, yes. Also, I would take on, so when they're desperate, they being a sponsor or CRO, oftentimes, and they often are desperate, they'll take on PIs with little or no research experience. So, and that can be a phase two or three trial as well.
Especially in a year like this year.
Yeah. And I would suggest, now this is just a suggestion, I would suggest taking on a trial that you really have no business doing in terms of you don't know where you're going to get your patients or any other facet, just so you can get some experience in the study and you can build up your PICV as a PI. Okay. Now, obviously, if you don't enroll anybody, that's going to be an issue with that sponsor. But it might be worth it overall just to get the experience. Unfortunately, in this industry, many a sponsor or CRO will not use your PI if their CV is blank when it comes to research.
So right. You want to even in a 2019 world?
No, less so, but still there's many that won't, right? It's just, if you find the right sponsor or CRO that's willing to take on your PI who's research naive, I would do so regardless of the studying your capability of performing.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Up to you how you would feel, you being the listener.
Yeah, if you're a brand new site owner or like a newer site owner, even experienced site owner, like this is the really good year. You should not have problems getting studies this year.
Yeah.
Even research naive. Like, we've been signing up new clients every week now.
Yeah.
For our consulting, for our biz dev. And we're getting them studies quickly.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah.
It may not always be the studies they want, but you're building experience for your PI who has none. Now they do.
Yep.
Right? And then try to enroll some patients in those. Eventually, you'll get the studies where you can enroll a lot of patients. Does a difficult accruing trial count against the site profile? No. What the sponsors and CROs keep track of as far as metrics are what you put on the feasibility survey and what you confirmed at the site selection visit that you can enroll. These are all documented. When they do SSVs, site selection visit at your site, the monitors are writing a report. You're basically confirming the feasibility numbers you put on your feasibility. We've done webinars on filling out feasibilities. You can be a little more embellishing in your actual numbers. At the site selection visit, yes, and probably should be to get those studies. At the site selection visit, you can bring them back down to earth a little bit. Okay? But if you, whatever you tell them at the site selection visit, it's going to be documented, and then they're going to hold that, they're going to hold you to that standard, the standard you set up for yourself. So even if you enroll 10 patients, but you said you would enroll 20, you're going to be penalized for that. Another site that enrolled 10 patients, but they only said they were going to enroll 8, they're not penalized for that. Right, so be careful what you're telling these people when they come to your site. Somebody said, very true, still having trouble finding studies for a new internal med doctor. You shouldn't. This is a perfect doctor. We had one SSV and she was turned down due to no research experience, even when she included an MD sub-I with a research experience per their request, but turned her down because the MD sub-I didn't have experience in the actual study indication. Found it odd. Don't find it odd. That's going to happen even in a busy year like this year. Get another one of like that. Get another study. That actually is common in a common market. We're not in a common market right now. We're in a very bullish market for studies. But it's still happening, but just not as often. So just my answer to you is, get more and do better at your site selection visits. And see, this is why you should do some phase four studies, because then that your doctor could say that they have done research. Phase four study is still research.
And also, if you convince whomever's there at your site doing the site selection visit, you convince them that you will have no difficulties getting patients, that also will help. That's the key component really in giving a site a study.
Yeah, you need to be you need to get better at sales. It's not about the sponsors being difficult. It's about you not telling them what they want to hear.
Yeah, numbers. We can get the numbers.
Yep. So you've got to work on that. Is internal EMR required to develop a site? No, it is not. Our sites use paper charts. SSV went great. They loved our site, just had that issue with the PI. Yep. And that's going to be an objection that you're going to have to get over. And you're going to have good answers for those objections. So just get better at that. And sometimes, no matter what you do, they're going to be sticklers for that experience. But in a 2019 market, luckily for us, or for most of us, that's not the case.
And that is why I recommend building up your CV any way you can. If it's taking on a study, you really have no business taking.
Ah, so almost on cue, look at the next slide. What to say? They're going to, when they come to your site or when they ask you in an email, you got to have these things prepared. What are your site metrics? How many studies have you done? If you haven't done any studies, how many patients do you have? Focus on what you have, not what you don't. What is your facility? Like, what are the capabilities? Do you have certain equipment that most sites don't have? Do you have overnight capabilities? Look at what the study is actually requiring and then see if you have any strengths that line up with that. And like Chris said, it all boils down to your patient database. So if you have the patients and you can demonstrate that you have knowledge and you can pull off a study, then focus on your patients. That's what they care. They want studies to accrue patients. 90% of trials are delayed because of low accrual rates. We're writing a book right now on research, and I'm doing a lot of – we have a lot of references in that book. It's 90%, and sponsors are paying $1 million a day per study. $1 million a day. So low accrual rates really add up, and we're all paying for it at the end. That's why we pay so much for our medications, right? And then phase four studies, I can't say it enough. Those are the ones that you should be able to get. Those are easy. They often don't care about experience. And then when those phase two and three bring up those questions, now you have experience. They're not going to ask you what phase. They might, but they probably are just going to ask you, do you have research experience? So here's some tools. ZymeWire is a good one. HubSpot as a CRM. The only tool you need is clinicaltrials.gov and an email and a willingness to be rejected 90% of the time.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, I would agree.
And if you like being rejected.
Well, I don't know about liked.
I don't know if I like it either, but I
you have no problem.
I'm used to it. Yeah.
Yeah, you have thick skin.
Get a domain and a website, okay? I use squarespace.com for both. Make it look nice. I do it for clients. Don't charge that much for it. Get a Gmail email address for your domain. Okay, so that's you can do that at G Suite. Whatever domain name you bought, you can get an email address associated to your domain so it looks more professional coming from a company email as opposed to like your own Gmail or your own Yahoo account. So those are some other tools you can use. Follow up. This is where this, and in again, in a 2019 market, this is kind of less important, but it still is important.
The last bullet there is important.
Yeah, get a CDA and a survey. That's the goal, all right? Get that CDA, and please, when they send you a CDA, get it back to them that same day.
Yes, quickly.
Don't sit on it for a month and then complain that they're not sending you a feasibility survey.
Bad idea.
We've had clients do this.
Yeah.
Like, more than a month. They're not checking their emails. There's CDAs sitting there.
Yeah.
They can't send you a feasibility survey without a CDA. They just won't do that.
And by the time you send in that CDA, they're already done with the recruitment of sites.
Someone is asking how to set up a database for a new site not affiliated with a clinic, a patient database. I would start with Excel. Get an Excel. See, and this is the problem. People are looking for technology. The technology is a tool to help you, right? How to set up a database of patients is to go out and find patients. There's no technology for that. It's you.
And you have to network with physicians, or, and it depends on what you're specifically looking for, what patient demographic. But, you know, you could be looking at clubs, what are those, Alzheimer's?
Support groups.
Support groups.
Community centers.
Yeah. All, there's any number of things you may be wanting to network with.
Other doctors in the area. We have sitting in our office today a chiropractor who's training to be a CRA.
Yeah.
They see patients. So setting up a patient, a database, I mean, if we want to talk about technology, that's one thing. Like, what can make it easier to sort through your data? But what good is a database if you don't have any data in it?
Right. You first need to make your network.
Yeah. And I would recommend Excel when you have nothing, because it costs nothing. There's no way around it. You got to go out, get out of your comfort zone, and go network. And biz dev, if you're going to own a site or run a site, you need to do that. Studies, patients, doctors, all the time, continuously. And there's a lot of subcomponents to all of that. So stop worrying about technology and worry about actually getting out and getting results. All right, check email. Please, just get your CDAs quickly, within the same day if possible, so that they can send you a feasibility survey. Then do your feasibility survey quickly too. Don't take longer than a week to do that. Do it the same day you get it.
Yeah, good slice, Amy. These are better than the last ones.
Yeah, Amy. Good job, Amy. I don't think she listens.
No, I don't either.
Answer your survey with the best possible case patient enrollment projections and database of combined physicians and network. Yes. So on the survey, you can put bigger projections than what you think you can actually do, and you can lower their expectations at the site selection visit, and you can lower expectations even more at the site initiation visit.
I kind of disagree with that. I don't think I would lower expectations. I would keep my numbers the same at the site selection visit.
Well, they'll hold you to that.
Especially your research naive, especially then, right? As a matter of fact, I may even increase them at that point.
That's another strategy.
Because you've got to get some experience on that CV. And then I would lower them at site initiation. But, you know, we did a little further analysis of our database, and we were a little bit off. This is really more likely what we were projecting we will enroll.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm thinking more of when your site's established.
Yeah.
You can do that.
That's different. Yeah, that's different. But I think we're kind of more working on the research naive here.
If it's research naive, yeah. I mean, what's scarier, having a bad metric on your site or not having a study at all?
Right, exactly.
Right, like, yeah, I agree with you there. Okay, CDA turnover is key. You'll be amazed at people complaining they're not getting studies and they're not sending CDAs back.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't work that way.
No, you have to be responsive.
Schedule your SSV, right? Site selection visit module and Intralinks. We have a site owner academy for this. Anyone interested can do that. Make sure your equipment and layout from week 2 module is covered. Again, that's from the site owner academy. You want to give them a rundown of basic equipment and layout for a site?
Just call me. If anything, set up a master CDA with a sponsor. That way you're set up for repeat trials. Yes, that's very true. Oftentimes, though, they don't send out a master CDA.
Yeah, you will not get a master CDA most times.
Yeah, it's like 10% of the time.
I know, first of all, we understand how the industry can be more efficient. That's not the purpose of this webinar. The purpose of this webinar is to tell you how it actually is and what you should do. But yes, there's a lot of things everyone can do to make the industry more efficient. Okay, so what's the basic layout and equipment for a site? Minimal bare requirements. Chris Auber is an expert on this topic.
Well, I don't know about an expert, but yeah, you probably need a lobby, though that's not required. You can have them wait out in the hallway or something, I suppose. But it's going to look funny, right? Because when the sponsor sends out or the CRO sends out a CRA to review your site, they put in the details. The better the CRA, the more details are going to be in that report. And if sponsor a CRO sees there's no lobby, they may take issue with that. It can be done, but it's better to have a lobby. Okay, so moving on, you need an exam room, somewhere to see the patient. do the physicals, gather the vitals, that type of thing. You need a laboratory. You could combine a lab with another room. For example, I've known sites that have had a lab and their PI storage area combined. You can do that. But here's what you want ideally. You want a lobby, an exam room, a lab, a conference room, IP room.
Double lock.
Yeah. And then.
And we talk about all this in the book too, which we're soon to be released.
Yeah.
And the comprehensive guide to clinical research, everything you ever needed to know.
And a conference room, somewhere the monitor can be. And a conference room can serve two purposes. You can do your SIV, SSVs there, and can be your monitor room. So that's minimal ideal, right? The more space, the better. You're going to have a lot of things you need to store once you have a study. Lab kits, shipping boxes, a bunch of stuff, patient charts. But a lot of that can be stored in the coordinator office area, something like that. Now, some of these rooms can be double occupied, right? You can do, like I said, the IP and the lab. Those could be one room. IP and coordinator office could be one room. But again, ideally, you want everything to have its own space. All right, so have a copy of your feasibility survey. That's for reference, right?
At
so
the what SSV, yeah.
What numbers did I say?
Yes, right? And they don't catch you off guard.
Yep.
Or if they ask you the questions again from your feasibility survey, you're supposed to say something similar to what you put on the survey.
Usually they're nice enough. Usually, not always, but usually the CRA will say, on your survey, you said you will enroll X patients.
Yeah.
Does this remain the case?
Mm-hmm.
Usually they say it like that, something like that.
Right.
But sometimes they will try and catch you in a lie.
Yeah, sometimes they get testy.
Yeah.
Because either they want to entertain themselves or they're just that way or a number of things, right? So you need to be prepared and have confidence, right? The confidence is key. Like, you don't want to come across, even if you don't know what you're doing, you don't want to come across as not knowing what you're doing as much as possible.
Yep.
Are medical science liaisons a good source to get trials anymore? Yes. So they are. Now, what I've found is those ones are seeds that you plant that will blossom a year or longer from when you plant them. So these are, for those that don't know what a medical science liaison is, most private practice physicians have sales reps that come to their office, bring lunch, they talk about the drug, and then they hope that the doctor starts prescribing that medication more.
Yep.
Right? Now, medical science liaison is their boss, the sales rep's boss, but also they have one foot on the sales department of the pharma company and another foot in research. So they're the ones, they're usually a pharmacist. They're the ones who understand both worlds, research and sales. And if you have a doctor who wants to do research, you need to get a meeting with that medical science liaison in your region and plant those seeds, because a year or longer. We have a study that we're screening our first patient this week at our other site.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Our PI planted those seeds with a medical science liaison.
3 years ago.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So MSLs are great, especially if your PI is well known amongst their reps or like a big prescriber in their territory.
But even if they're not.
Even if they're not. Yeah. The MSLs are rarely reached out to you.
Right.
Right. So when they do, like, you have all their attention. And they themselves will physically come to your site and do like a mini site selection visit.
Yeah.
It's less formal, you know, it's more friendly, but they'll do it. And yeah, we have a study right now from a MSL from a couple years ago. Every year we get one. Can nurse practitioners be utilized as sub-eyes? Yes. Absolutely. Sub-eyes. Nurse practitioners, I love nurse practitioners.
Even on a very, very rare occasion, they can be PI.
Yeah, I know an NP right now that's a PI for a study.
And very rare, though.
It is rare. It's not the norm. And I also know a physician assistant right now who's a PI on a study.
Just the same. Very rare.
Very rare. But NPs can be great sub-Is. They're a great source of patient referrals. They could be a great asset for you to add to your feasibility surveys. They can be a great addition to your site selection visit. They're just like doctors. I mean, they pretty much are doctors. They do everything a doctor does. They can prescribe. They do vitals. They do everything.
Sure.
Right? And they're more accommodating. They're more usually. Usually they're more willing to do more of the work when it comes to research.
I need to text our NP.
Yeah, text our NP.
I need to let her know she needs to be here this Thursday.
She does need to be here this Thursday. Thank you for the reminder. Chris is texting our nurse practitioner right now.
Yeah, exactly. I completely had forgotten.
So then you'll get a site selection visit follow-up letter, all right? 4 weeks after SSV, usually it takes about 4 weeks to get the follow-up letter. And they'll let you know if you were approved. If you're not approved, sometimes they don't tell you, and you've got to follow up. This is where, at this stage of the game, I'm just fishing for information. All right, we had our SSV. Did we get the study or not? Chris always asks them before they leave the site, would you recommend our site for the study?
That's not true any longer. I don't always ask anymore.
You don't ask that anymore? Why?
I have a very good feel on whether or not they're going to recommend us usually now.
Okay.
But initially, I did always ask.
Because you were fishing for information.
Yeah, and it's your last opportunity to overcome any objections.
Yes. Now, if you're not approved, follow up as to why. Sometimes they don't tell you why. Sometimes they'll give you, like, canned responses, like, not enough expertise or too many sites in the area, but try to find out the real reason if you can, if at all possible. And then repeat this process constantly. You can never have too many studies. Don't stop getting studies just because you have a bunch of studies starting up. Don't get your foot off the gas. Studies can end at any time in the middle of the study, even if the sponsor doesn't like the data or if the safety profile is not as good as they thought, they'll just end the study. So you better have a full pipeline, all right? Especially with improved technologies and real-time data that they're having now. They can end studies quicker, right? The whole thing is fail faster now for sponsors. Fail faster, and that's not good for sites. Who are the best entry-level coordinators to hire and grow at a site? I love hiring coordinators internally. So taking someone with no research experience, and then if you have the time and the patience for it, grow them, groom them into being a coordinator. I like MAs. I like MAs because they can draw blood. They can...
Did that last time.
So we keep having internet going in and out. But as far as like the, I like to groom study coordinators internally. So MAs are good, CNAs, bachelors fresh out of college, they're good. I like to mix it up, and then you're not always going to get it right. Like when you're, first of all, the person may think they know research, or the person who you're hiring may think that they want to do research, and then when they realize what it actually is, they don't. So it's not always going to work out. Like it's, no matter what you do, whether it's training employees, getting studies, finding patients, finding PIs, it's not easy, ever. None of it. Audio keeps going in and out. CRC burnout is just as bad sometimes. Correct. CRA burnout's still worse, but yeah, CRC burnout is bad for some sites.
The travel and all for CRAs is, I think, what adds to the burnout.
Yeah, the travel for the CRAs, being away from the family, just always on an airplane. That's, I think CRA's burnout is more, but yeah, CRC burnout could be bad at some sites. Some sites truly don't care about, building a good business. They just want to extract as much money as they can while the market's good.
Sure.
And so you're going to have a lot of coordinators overworked.
Oh yeah.
And rewarded with the work by giving them more work.
Yep.
It's just the reality of the...
And there were some other questions we missed. It was one about a contract attorney.
Ah, right. Where's that one? That's all you. How do we find a contract lawyers for reviewing the contracts? Well, you don't need a lawyer. You get Chris Hopper.
Sure. And while I'm not an attorney, they're not that difficult to review. To my understanding, there's only three, and I would agree with this, there's only really three different contracts that are pretty much used in this industry. Once you've reviewed one, you've reviewed all, one of each. So you're only interested in key components to the contract: indemnification, how often are you going to get paid, and maybe any specifics to your payments and fees. Everything else is pretty boilerplate, and really it's not anything you're interested in. At least 3/4 of the contracts is not anything most sites are going to be interested in. Are you interested in publication rights? No. Most people are not going to be interested. So, but you can hire any attorney, any contract attorney to review it if you'd like. Or, as Dan had said, we're more than happy to do this for you.
That's right. Any other questions, we will leave it open for a minute.
1 minute?
A minute. And then we will wrap it up.
You have 1 minute for your questions.
Do you have a strategy into entering hospital trial market? If you're not a hospital and you're trying to get a study from a hospital, it's not going to happen. They're usually investigator-initiated studies, and they work with their own departments and maybe other hospitals. If you're talking about
owning a hospital,
managing trials for hospitals, good luck with that as well. There's a maze of departments. I don't know why you would want that on yourself. Like, that's just not a good business model, I don't think. Unless you could find a niche, but that's... I do some consulting and even some monitoring at some hospitals, university hospitals, and it's a nightmare. Like, it's a nightmare to just do standard things. Forget about trying to convince them that you're going to manage their trials. I'm sure there's a way to do it, but there's easier ways to get involved in clinical research.
Or you can just go apply for a hospital.
You go apply, or you can start as a consultant, maybe. It would be easier maybe to start out as a consultant for the hospital. Yeah. So, all right. That's it. Is there a template for a contract agreement with PI? Nope. You have to create one. You need to get an attorney and do it, or you can just get it. What a PI is?
Oh, we have one.
We have one. If you're a client, we'll give you one.
Right.
Exactly. If you're not, you just go on Google, look up independent contractor agreement, change some of the words to make it applicable to research and a PI, or hire an attorney to do it. It's going to be like $800. These contracts don't mean anything, right? PI can leave you anytime and go do a study on their own. The best you can hope for is you have some ammo for small claims court, which is 10,000 or less in claims. You're not going to sue anybody, and they're more likely not going to sue you either. It costs about $60,000 to sue somebody. What is the average rate to hire a PI? We have an entire webinar on this topic. There is no average, and it varies from partnership to percentage to fee-for-service to salary to hourly. It's really all over the place. Where I would start is... every PI is different. Every physician's different. Find out what they want and see how you can make that work. That's what I would do. There is no template and there's no recipe for that. Many times clinicaltrials.gov, the generic email and phone is given that does not give you any leads. How do you get to the clinical trial team? You move on to the next one. Or you go on LinkedIn, or you go on ZymeWire, or you try to find it on HubSpot. There's places you can go.
You can also look up contact info for that company and then start there.
Right.
With the gatekeeper.
What I do is, like, when I get those generic emails, I just move on.
You can get a contact. It's going to take work, though.
Yep. Everything takes work.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's much easier if the contact information is there on clinicaltrials.gov. If it's not, it's going to take some work.
Right, right.
We just experienced this with one of our clients that was very interested in a particular trial on clinicaltrials.gov. It took days to find the contact.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done. It just takes a while. Did we answer the, do you guys facilitate job placement for entry-level CRAs? We do.
Yes, through the CRA Academy, we help with that. We help with the CV. We help with the interview prep. This is after the three-month course, which is the CRA Academy. And then during the internship, you're really going to learn a lot of the nitty-gritty things that they might ask you in the interviews. And so, yes, we do. We do do that there as well. This was a good webinar.
One more question.
Engaged group.
What is the average rate to hire a PI?
Oh, no, I answered that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I didn't hear it. Where was I?
You were here.
Huh, must not have been paying attention, sorry.
The answer is there's no average and it's all over the place.
20% of study budget.
But that's only for certain types. Yeah, that's not true. For everybody.
True. The 20 to 50%.
My answer was find out what that PI wants, and then you see if that's feasible for you to do, or some variation of that.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah. I mean, you're small. Use that to your advantage. You don't need to ask a board of directors for approval. You're not Pfizer. There's benefits to being small. Tons. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it. Everyone will get the replay. The slides are not for download, but you'll get the video, and then you can just, I guess, screenshot everything. Sorry for the internet. Keep going in and out. Catch you next month. Take care.
So, hey, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.